All right, guys, welcome to Emerging Legal Trends. Let me introduce myself real quick for those who do not know me. My name is Anthony Bandiero. I'm an attorney and senior legal instructor for Blue to Gold Law Enforcement Training. I like to say this is what I do for a living. I have the honor and the privilege to train cops all around the nation in case law. So my passion is legal survival, right? I want you to do your job. I want you to have the tools to catch bad guys, but I also want you to be legally safe. A lot of you have heard of that saying, go home at night, right, guys? You've heard that time and time again. Hey, go home at night. Take this training seriously. Go home at night. And Major Honey's here. What's up, my friends? So, it's not enough to just go home at night. My job is to help you go home to your own bed. Wake up with a job in the morning. Don't get criminally charged. And if you get sued, win. I want to repeat, law enforcement's only goal is not just to make it home at night. There are many, many cops in this nation that go home at night, but they wake up in a jail cell, or they lose their job, or they cost their agency $12.2 million, right? And kick the firefight out. So are you guys with me on this? That's my motivation. I'm glad that you're here. And by the way, so I'm a former trooper with the Nevada Highway Patrol, and here the major, and that's my boss. Okay. He was my boss, not anymore, but he was my boss. And I'm glad to have you here. All right. We're coming full circle. So disclaimers, no black and white answers, right? Aaron's here. What's up, Aaron? Now Kevin's a student. That's awesome. So no black and white answers. Anthony, what is the hardest thing about teaching, search and seizure? Without a doubt, it is the fact that, there's not a lot of black and white answers. Change the facts, change the answer. Also want you to know that people matter in this business. Your attorneys matter, your prosecutors, your defense attorneys matter. Some are really, really good and some are not so good. The same with prosecutors. Judges matter. Some judges understand, frankly, everything that you do, right? Some judges don't really understand Terry stops and so forth because they're newer or they don't understand that area of the law. Laws and agency SOPs may be more restrictive. I'm going to talk about some national standards here. If you have any doubts about the legality of your actions, push up the chain. And finally, this course is legal education, not legal advice. I am an attorney, but I'm not your attorney. So here's the deal. If I teach you something in this class and your attorney says, I know Anthony teaches that, but this is what I want from officers that work for me. Guess who's going to win that argument? They will win it every time. However, we have a lot of attorneys on here tonight. If there's anything that I say that you want me to back up, if there's anything, Anthony, do me a favor. Can you send me a case on that? Absolutely. I will send you case law on everything that I teach here. I can back up what I say. So I'm going to teach you several important legal issues facing law enforcement. And this is just a snippet, right? This is just a small taste of what I'm teaching here. The Fourth Amendment, curtilage, drones, some takeaways. We have a lot to talk about, but don't forget. And Rick, do me a favor. Can you put in the link for the registration for the class right after this? So we have this class and we have another class starting at 6 p.m. Pacific. So this is going to be a long night for me. But if you have the time and you want to stick around and learn a lot of case law, tonight is your night. All right. The Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment is pithy. It is short and sweet. It says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. And no warrant shall issue, but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, a particular describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. That's right, 54 words. And these 54 words control 100% of your behavior. But at the end of the day, the Fourth Amendment only prohibits one type of search or seizure. What type is that? The unreasonable one, right, O'Neill, right? The unreasonable one. So therefore, if you're being reasonable, you're being 100% lawful. Now, here's the deal. I teach a lot of cops. I've taught over 35,000 cops, and I'm on the road for you know, over 50 weeks a year. Thanks to Aaron. Thank you, Aaron, for, I don't know if I have a family anymore, but thank you for booking me all these classes. So Aaron Martin, by the way, is our national account manager, and she keeps us very, very busy. She's very good at what she does. So, and by the way, just as a reminder, we, so if you have not shared your agency and who you are with everybody, please do so. Everybody likes to see who else is here. So at the end of the day, it's unreasonable searches and seizures. Now, I cannot tell you, this would be very bad advice, if I said to you, you know what, all you got to do, if you go into court and you are asked why you did what you did, put your hand over your heart and the other one on the Bible and swear under oath that you were reasonable, right? I'm telling you right now, I expect everybody on this webinar, I absolutely expect you to have good faith. I expect you to go out there when you police your community to really honestly believe that you are doing the right thing. But I got to tell you, it's not good faith that generally saves you in court. It's objective reasonableness. And objective reasonableness to me essentially comes down to these three factors. Number one, if you want to conduct a search or seizure, where is your consent? Do you have consent? If you want to search my car, no problem. Ask me for my consent. I'm not saying I'm going to give it to you, but you can always ask. If you do not have my consent, don't worry. You want to search my car? Where is your recognized exception? Where is your motor vehicle exception? Where is your search incident to arrest and so forth, right? That's a limited doctrine after Gantt, but where is your recognized exception? But if you do not have consent and you do not have a recognized exception, you better have a warrant. Okay. So here's part of the emerging legal trends. Let me ask you something. When it comes to the Fourth Amendment, there's two branches of the Fourth Amendment. There's two domains. There's search and seizure, and there is use of force. Okay. Search and seizure, use of force. What is that seminal case that guides us on use of force? Right. Exactly, Caleb. It's Graham. Right? The three factors. Hey, you know, severity of the crime, immediate danger to officer or others, a flight, and so forth. Guys, those are the three factors. Now, many agencies around the country, like Las Vegas Metro, add more factors. They have like eight, right? They don't have three anymore. They have eight. But there is your Graham versus Connor. That's where it all starts. Where is that Graham versus Connor like case for search and seizure? What case can you point to that says, hey, this case right here gives us the framework for search and seizure like Graham versus Connor? It ain't Terry versus Ohio. It ain't, it's not Carroll. It's not Arizona versus Gantt. Trevor is absolutely correct. It's not there. It's not there. There is no Graham versus Connor type case for search and seizure. Why? Because it's all based on totality of circumstances, reasonable this, reasonable that. But folks, let me just share something with you, and I want you to steal this from me. I want you to take this back to your agencies. If the Supreme Court really did come out with a Graham versus Connor type case for search and seizure, do you know what they would say? Crew. It's crew. Look at all these cases and look at them from a high level like I do. All these cases come down to crew. But I certainly know that in 2023 and beyond, these cases do not come down to can't really explain why. There was a day that friends like myself could go do something in the street, go pat people down. And when we were asked in court, Trooper, why did you do that? Why did you pat that person down? Your Honor, I did it for officer safety. There were times that we were allowed to do stuff like that, right, Major? But not anymore. Those days are over. Or my FTO said, or I was trained that way. Folks, my friends, those days are over. I'll get off my soapbox and get down to business. Give me some exceptions to recognize exceptions, right? O'Neill says, I pat down everyone. that's funny. But you like putting hands on people, O'Neill? That's the kind of place you want to live? All right. Give me some recognized exceptions. Don't give me O'Neill's recognized exceptions, okay? I don't know where he works, but you know, he gives a lot of free massages in his city. When you enter O'Neill's city, it says free massages by law enforcement, aka pat downs. Asian circumstances, plain view. Give me one more. Motor vehicle exception, good. There's all kinds of exceptions out there. Hey, Rick, do me a favor. Put a link to the, to the book, to the search and seizure book. So I have a book with about 160, 160 different doctrines, and it's all about these recognized exceptions. All right. So let's talk about curtilage. We have to talk about curtilage. If you know my training, if you've ever been to one of my classes, you know you ain't leaving that room unless we talk about curtilage. Right, Sean? You know, that's my baby here, because cops violate curtilage all the time. They violate it all the time. I was asked one time, Anthony, out of your experience, after teaching 35,000 cops, and 2,000 attorneys, what do cops violate the most? And I made a joke in there. I won't tell it right now, but I said curtilage, and I meant it with all sincerity. The first thing we have to know is that curtilage is protected like the home itself, right? I want you to appreciate how important that is, because nothing is as protected as your home. Your body is less protected than your home. We do all kinds of things to people's bodies. Like O'Neill pats down everybody. They do visual cavity searches at jails when people are putting general population in some jails, right? So, we do search incident to arrest. We do all kinds of things to a person. But you step one foot in a door without crew and you are violating people's rights. How many times have cops done a knock and talk? And the person is like getting frustrated and they don't want to talk anymore. And the cop puts their foot in the door to prevent that person from closing it. How many times have cops done that to prevent them from ending a knock and talk? And with those facts and those facts alone, have they violated curtilage? Absolutely. Right. And we've not all done it, but I've definitely done it. Curtilage is derived from the word curtilage. It means courtyard. I wish we had a less bougie word than curtilage, because only cops and attorneys use that word. But we have to, have a word that defines a particular space, which is around the home. Now, out of all the things all the different doctrines and analogies that I teach, the curtilage color codes is the most popular. If you've been to my training, you definitely know red, yellow, and green. Red are those areas that are curtilage. Think backyards. But these are areas where the general public should not be. The general public should not be in your backyard. Neither should the police, unless they have what? Usually some form of exigency. I'm not telling you cannot go into backyards, but I am telling you, if you are going to step one foot into a backyard, you better have, and it's closed off to the public. It's not where the homeowner is accessible. You better have some kind of urgency, domestic and knife stabbing, shot spotter, and, a person yelling for help. Yellow is curtilage. But these are areas that are available to the public to make contact with the homeowner. My friend asks, hey, what about unfenced backyards? Unfenced backyards, generally speaking, are curtilage. You don't need a fence. Now, there are four factors for curtilage. I don't think I go through them here because we don't have enough time. But in a case called Dunn, D-U-N-N, the U.S. Supreme Court said that the four factors that you should evaluate when determining whether or not there's curtilage is, number one, proximity. Proximity to the home, basically being adjacent to the home. The next is enclosure. Is the area enclosed with like a fence? Number three is the use. Is the area being used for domestic living? Barbecue pits, lawn furniture, and so forth. And finally, is site screening. Has the person done something to keep prying eyes out? Do you need all four? No. But probably what two do you need? Proximity and use. Green. Green is open fields. These are areas that are not protected by the Constitution. So as you are going up to houses and you're going to do whatever kind of police work, knock and talk, investigation, and so forth, I need you to understand the curtilage color codes. If you want to be on yellow, fine. Act like a reasonably polite citizen. If you want to be on red, fine. Give me exigency. So let's look at this very, you know, typical home in some areas, right? But what color constitutionally is the sidewalk in the street? Okay. It's green, right? There is no constitutional protection of that area. It's, you know, open fields in some sense, but it's just not protected. What color constitutionally is that driveway at 2 o'clock in the afternoon? Yellow. I think it's yellow. You know, you can argue otherwise. You can say, Anthony, there's no enclosure, there's no site screening. But for my lawyers here, I got to tell you, I'm not taking that position. Here's my position. A driveway, and in some cases don't agree with this, but most do. A driveway that is adjacent to the home, like one car length or so from the home, to me is curtilage because that is part of the home. But as you get a longer driveway, it turns into open fields. And the reason why that's important is because we do have a lot of officers who are grabbing cars from driveways. They're grabbing because they're stolen, because they're a hit and run vehicle. And the vehicle is likely, in my view, on curtilage. I would not be doing that if I were you. I would get a warrant on that. What color constitutionally is the area by the window, by the fence, by the gate to the left, and so forth, right? Right. What's up, Ed? So it's red. To me, it's red. Now, it's really red right next to the home, but here's the point. You have a cop that's doing a knock and talk, and they have reason to believe that in the backyard is a stolen motorcycle. So far, so good. They knock on the door. Nobody answers. Then a partner goes over to the right area, the fence on the right over here, you know, and let's say right there, and they do a pull up over the fence, and they're on the fence hanging, and they look back and they say, oh, hey, it's the stolen bike is back there. Is that likely a search under the Fourth Amendment? Yes or no, right? Okay. And let me ask you also another question. Do cops do this all the time? Let's be honest here, guys. Let's be honest. Absolutely. Okay. What happens if the cop goes to the left side of the house? And because there's a pool party in the back and they say, hello, police, can I talk to you? And the guys come to the gate and talk. Did that violate their curtilage? Right. And so if the judge agrees that that was socially acceptable, the red turns into yellow. All right. What color constitutionally is that driveway at 2 o'clock in the morning? Lights are off, nobody's up, and so forth. Look, I'm not telling you that you cannot do a knock and talk at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm just telling you that when the court asks you, hey, why do you believe that this person would be receptive to you? You better have a reason to let them know. Let's look at this house right here. Okay. So that's where curtilage is probably, I'm being a little generous, but there's in the backyard, there's that, you know, pool, you know, a jacuzzi, there's lawn furniture and so forth. Okay. And you got the barn. Now look what I did to the barn. I put red over the barn, right? Because you can't enter the barn without some form of crew. But what I did not put around the barn is curtilage. Barns don't have curtilage. Burger King doesn't have curtilage. Only houses have curtilage. The only thing that lives in that barn are horses and my mother-in-law. No human habitation. So it's not a home. I cracked myself up. But Anthony, what if somebody is living there? Well, does it have the characteristics of a home? Does it have that backyard and driveway and porch? Does it have those characteristics? If it does, it may have some curtilage. Now, the officer goes to the house, knock and talk. Nobody answers. The officer then walks over to where that arrow is and looks into this barn and sees a meth lab in plain view. What color is the cop standing on constitutionally? Mm-hmm. Green, yellow, green, yellow, green, yellow, red. Uh-oh. All right. Green. Yellow. Here's the thing. It's green. Why? All the factors for curtilage work against this. Number one, proximity. Is the officer adjacent to the home? The answer is no. Is the area enclosed? The answer is no. Is there any use that is like domestic life? The answer is no. Is there any site screening? The answer is no. So we don't have any of the four factors. Do you need all four factors? The answer is no, but you need at least two. Proximity and use. Proximity and use. You do not need enclosure. You do not need site screening, but generally speaking, those do help. What happens, you're welcome, Joe. What happens if you move that shed closer to the home? Can the shed have some curtilage because it's so damn close to the house? You see what just happened there? Sheds have no curtilage. However, when you move them close to the house, they can get curtilage because of the house. What you can do while you're on curtilage. Okay. So there's two reasons, generally speaking, to be on curtilage: knock and talks and calls for service. Let's talk about knock and talks. When it comes to knock and talks, we use the Girl Scout rule. Complying with the terms of traditional knock and talk do not require fine grained legal knowledge. No Grey Poupon required here, my friends. It is generally managed without incident by the nation's Girl Scouts and trick-or-treaters. Here's what I'm trying to say. Not what I'm trying to say, what the Supreme Court's trying to say. So they're telling you, hey, look, when you're doing this, invoking this tool, you know, using this tool called the knock and talk, you got to mind your P's and Q's. You have to act like a reasonably polite citizen. Here's an example of that. Jardine's top right is suspected of growing marijuana for sale. The cops do not have probable cause, but what they do have is a knock and talk. They're going to go up to the house and do a knock and talk. And here is what the house looks like to me constitutionally: green, yellow, and redda. So, but they have a little trick up their sleeve over at Miami PD. Do we have any cops from Miami here? Say yes, or me. Any cops from Miami or Southern Florida? Because you'll appreciate this, right? So the cops then go up to the house and they bring Frankie, Palm Beach Works. They bring Frankie, the drug sniffing dog. Now, I used to live in Miami as a kid and I know about Miami. And I said to myself, oh my God, that is a legit police dog. Look at his nose. It's white. He just got off work. Cocaine from Miami PD. He's a very happy dog. The dog is brought to the front door. It predictably alerts. And we go from there. We put that into a warrant. Are we good, my friends? Are we good bringing the drug sniffing dog to the person's door? Right. The answer is no. It turned the yellow into red. That is a search under the Fourth Amendment. To find a visitor, knocking on the door is routine, even if sometimes unwelcome. To spot that same visitor exploring the front path with a metal detector, or marching his bloodhound into the garden before saying hello and asking permission, would inspire most of us to, well, call the police. Okay. Christopher says apartment breezeways are slightly different. That is true in most states, but not Texas, Connecticut, and Nebraska are the top three that come to my mind. Those states, you cannot, Illinois, I don't think Illinois is a problem, but I could be wrong. But those states consider a search. Other states do not. All right. So here's what we got going on. So boyfriend, girlfriend, they are going to college and they end up breaking up. Fine. They remain friends. It happens all the time. So the ex-girlfriend starts dating somebody new. And the ex-boyfriend is like, oh, you know, who are you dating now? And the ex-girlfriend's like, no, I'm not telling you because you're going to harass that guy out of my life. So after a couple weeks, whatever, she will not tell him who she's dating. The ex-boyfriend has a key from the old days. And he goes to the house, her house, at like midnight and lets himself in. And he sneaks around and he grabs her cell phone and leaves the house. So he then looks at the text messages and tries to find out who she's dating now. So again, to harass him out of the picture. He then tries to return the phone around 4 a.m. to, to hopefully not get caught. Well, he's in the house and he's sneaking around trying to put the phone back. Well, the ex-girlfriend and the roommate both wake up and they scream, yell, get out, get out, get out. He then leaves. He retreats home. So the cops come, they're told the story, they go to his house, they do a good old-fashioned knock and talk. They knock on his door. He opens the curtain, he looks through the curtain, he sees the two police officers on the front, you know, porch, and he closes the blinds and the curtain, and he never makes an attempt to answer the door. The cops leave. The three striper shows up, and Sarge is like, what you got? So the officers say what they have, and they, hey, he's in there. We know he's in there. The officers then go back up to the door, and they pound on the door. Police, we know you're in there. Come out. He does not come out. They then go to his window, his bedroom window. Have you ever seen a first-generation Ring doorbell? We know you're in there. That's the first generation Ring doorbell, by the way, right? We know you're in there. Doesn't come out. They go back up to the front door and already, this is good stuff. And Sean, awesome. Thank you, Sean. Okay. So put the case in there too, the full case. I think you said Whitaker. Okay. So the cops go back up there and they pound on his door. And finally, he comes out. Right? Okay. Sean, do me a favor. Can you send it to everyone, my friend? I think Sean has a case where the Seventh Circuit did find that this was a search by sniffing apartments. Thank you so much. Okay. So he finally comes out. He is arrested and he sues. He says, you violated my rights. And the cop's like, no, we conducted knock and talks, you know? We can do that. Now, were these knock and talks, yes or no? All of them. Okay. No, they were not, right? I like to say that these were Glock and talks, right? When police do this, they are coercing somebody out of their home. In effect, they are arresting the person, seizing the person out of their home, right? Let me see. In buildings, I don't know. Good. All right. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Sean. I appreciate that. Okay. So he sues. He says, I want money from you, right? Police department. I want money. And the court is going to give him money. They found that this was a violation of the Constitution. And not only that, it was clearly established. No, so no qualified immunity. Once back in the curtilage, the officers then upped the ante in their attempts to convince French to come out of his home by, among other things, continuing to knock on his bedroom window, continue to knock on his front door, locating and knocking on his bedroom window frame, and yelling for him to come out of his home. As such, the officer's behavior is plainly inconsistent with Jardine's, which clearly established that an implicit social license, the Girl Scout rule, sets the boundaries on what acts officers may engage in within the curtilage of the home, absent what? Exigent circumstances. And can I ask you something? How many cops on here would have done the exact same thing? How many of your officers would have done the exact same thing? A lot of them. Probably most of us on this webinar have done something similar. And I'm not saying you can't do it, but I am saying this. If you are going to do this, if you're going to pound on people's door and say, this is the police, you are coming out with your hands up. If you're going to bullhorn, hey, this is the police, come out your hands up, right? If you're going to do that, fine, then you need exigent circumstances, because that person, when they come out their hands up, are they come out consensually? The answer is no. They are coerced, and they're coerced out of their home. And I got to tell you, cops do this all the time. And when I ask them, why are you doing it? They say, because we've done business that way for 20 years, Anthony, never had a problem. Well, until one day, a guy like French sues you. And in my estimate, that little stunt right there cost that small department in Maine over $500,000. And can I tell you something? I would have done the exact same thing when I was a cop, because I didn't know these rules. I'm not saying you cannot do it. I'm not saying you cannot bullhorn people out of their home. I'm not saying you cannot pound on the door and say, come out. But I am saying, if you're going to do it, you either need a warrant or you need exigent circumstances. I hope that makes sense. Knock and talk. Awesome. So, hey, just real quick, Erin, again, is our account manager. She's in charge of bringing blue to gold instructors to agencies around the nation. We do a lot of close training. That's kind of like our new model right now. So if you're interested in teaching your agency, give us a call and let us know. And Erin, that's her email right there. And you can ask for it again. But bye, Erin. Thank you. All right. So knock and talk. The narcs are going to do a knock and talk. This guy suspected growing marijuana for sale. So they go to the house. They, you know, four deep. They have the curtilage here. They go into the backyard for officer safety, right? Because drug traffickers and manufacturers are dangerous people, Your Honor. While in the backyard, this officer saw evidence in plain view. And he notified his officers up front, hey, you know, let's lock it down. Let's secure it for a warrant. Do you see the problem here, though? The problem is that these officers are in somebody's backyard for some generalized officer safety rationale. They had nothing specific that their safety was in any danger. So why should they be in somebody's backyard? At the same time, do cops do stuff like this? The answer is yes, they do. But they shouldn't, right? Okay. And here's one of the more important cases that I teach. It's something that I've been teaching for a while, and it's one of my more important cases. Here's what happened. A guy named David Bowling is driving home from a bar. He's intoxicated. He gets into an accident. He kills a female jogger. He goes home. He parks his car behind his house. The next morning, he is observed pulling his truck into a garage, closes the door, and he's there for, he does not drive the car for 3 days. After about 3 days, the neighbor who's observing all this thinks this is very suspicious. And also considering the fact that there was an auto pedestrian accident 3 days prior. So she reports her observations as an anonymous tip. So she doesn't put her name on it, but that's fine. Two detectives go to the house and do a good old-fashioned knock and talk. They knock on the door, nobody answers. But David Bowling done messed up. David left his garage door open by 12 inches to let an animal come in and out. But here's the deal, right? If the cops can actually see his vehicle and they can determine what kind of vehicle it is, then they may have the right guy, because they knew that it was a mid-80s Ford truck, tan in color. They got on their hands and knees and looked under the garage and saw the vehicle in plain view. The vehicle is a 1986 Ford Ranger, tan in color with front end damage. They then go get a warrant. They seize it. Are we good? David Bowling says we're no good. He says you violated my rights. The cop's like, no, that's plain view. Okay. We are no good, right? We are no good. Now, I know you. A lot of you guys are saying, no, this is no good. But I can tell you, can we all agree, though, that a lot of cops would have done the exact same thing? Right? So a lot of cops would have done the exact same thing. I call this the, you know, the Peep and Tom rule, right? Or the artificial vantage point. What's going on here is that this is not plain view. The cop has no right to be where he is at. He's basically trespassing on this guy's property. And that's not a lawful observation. And what the court found is this: we take great caution in rendering impermissible the actions of an officer employing only his or her bare physical faculties. However, the officer did not just sway to one side or the other to observe something. He did not merely bend over slightly to observe something. He got down on his hands and knees with his head almost touching the ground and looked into the garage. We therefore conclude that the officer's actions constituted a warrantless search, which violated the personal and societal values protected by the Fourth Amendment. And it gets worse. The judge was not told about this. The judge was only told that the garage was open and the officers conducted a plain view observation. When the judge found out what really happened, he suppressed the evidence as reckless with the facts. He basically said, yeah, you got a warrant for me, but the warrant was not valid because you basically left out material information. If I would have known about that, I would have never signed that warrant. David Bowling walked on this. And I can promise you, I teach this enough. I can promise you a lot of your officers would have done the exact same thing. They would have this case on their hands because they don't understand curtilage, right? Now, I'm not saying that when you go on to, when you do knock and talks, you have to walk like a penguin, but you don't have to walk like a penguin. You can move your head. You can bend down. Penguins don't bend down much, do they? Okay. You can bend down. You can look. You just can't get on your hands and knees. You can't do pull-ups on people's fences. So what I'm trying to say to you is you are allowed to be nosy, but you just can't be intrusive. Where is that line? I cannot draw it for you. You have to draw your own lines. But just keep this in mind that if you are on people's curtilage and you are doing something and you're thinking to yourself, man, I sure would not like this done to me, then you shouldn't be doing it to other people. Because when I say that, when I show that case to people, they're like, but Anthony, we're investigating a serious crime. You know, we're not the Girl Scouts. I say, yeah, but what if this was done to you? Would you be pissed off if ADT or a vacuum seller or whatever did this to you? Yeah, I wouldn't like it, but we're not selling ADT. We're trying to solve murders. I say, well, if you're up there for a knock and talk, the rules are the same, right? So this is one of my favorite videos. A student in Texas wrote this song and we put it to a video and we thought it was pretty clever.
As I walk from the driveway to the sidewalk to the door, I look around and think, can I be here and what for? Courts say curtilage is the same as the residence, so don't be on it when you're looking for your evidence. Curtilage isn't always easy to define, so I'm gonna try to break it down line by line. This rhyme may be corny, but please be kind. I'm not good at this and it took a lot of time. The first defining feature you need to get in your dome is how close is the land to the home. Curtilage and land may go hand in hand. While not all land is curtilage, all curtilage is land. Rule number two is the property enclosed, or can you walk on it unopposed? Is it fenced off, gated, slated, and plated? I'm working real hard to keep this rhyme G-rated. Rule number C, if you listen to me, can only be one thing, and that's sight screening. So if you find yourself going past a bush or a tree just to see, it's probably time to turn around and leave. The final decided factor is the most unforgiving. What's the use? Is it domestic living? Now are y'all all thinking the same thoughts as me? I've done this carefree. What's the worst that could be? If you mess up, you're denied qualified immunity, denied impunity, and now they're suing me. I'm not trying to be in trouble or be a console. Let's talk about the exceptions. Between you and me, there is three. That is all you need. Exigency, emergency, and urgency. Ultimately, you'll be viewed on what seems reasonable. Violating the Constitution is still treasonable. If you don't have an exception still in doubt, all you have to do is pretend that you're a Girl Scout. They go door to door with the cookies I'm annihilating. They've been doing this for years without violating. The final rule I need you to know on my mission is that you cannot use an improved viewing position. I know you want to see in that window, Mr. Go-Getter, but don't be bending down just so you can see better.
Look, if you can make a rap song about curlage, you have definitely gotten my respect. Let's talk about calls for service, right? The rules are different. Obviously, if you have a call for service, it allows some level of intrusion. So, how much intrusion? Well, what is your call for service? Is it a dog barking call? Is it a domestic? Is it a stabbing? Is it a shot spotter? Is it a murder, an active shooter? That all depends on what you can do. Do you want to go into the backyard for a dog barking call? Man, I mean, you're pushing it. Do you want to go into the backyard for a stabbing? Obviously all day, right? So a couple things. Number one, the severity of the crime does not create the exigency. We know this from a famous case called Peyton. What happened there briefly is that Peyton killed a guy 2 days prior. Then the police track him down to his house. Now, they don't have a warrant. They just have probable cause. They knock on his door. They believe he is home. They enter the home. They find evidence of the murder in plain view. Are we good? The answer is no. The Supreme Court said that the Fourth Amendment prohibits the police from making a warrantless and non-consensual entry into a suspect's home in order to make a routine felony arrest. This also applies to shell arrest. Also, I'm trying to put an end to body snatching. Body snatching is otherwise known as a threshold arrest. Here's what happens. Cops do it all the time. It is an emerging legal trend. It needs to end ASAP. Here's what I'm talking about. Cops will have probable cause for somebody, but they don't have exigency. They don't have an arrest warrant. They don't have the guy's consent. And he is at the door. He answers the door to the cops and he's talking. And the cop goes like this, "Sir, you are under arrest. Come out here." "I ain't coming out." "No, I told you you're coming out here." "I ain't coming out." And the cop then goes into the home and body snatches him out of the home. That, my friends, is unlawful. You have no authority to enter people's home to pull them out without some form of exigency, arrest warrant, or their consent.
Get out here right now. Get out here.
I hit that
Get wall. On the ground.
No. They hit that wall so hard, I thought they were going to come through the wall. Stop.
What you going to do?
Okay.
You know, I wonder when that officer pulled the trigger on that taser, did he immediately know that he fucked up? Did he say to himself, "Man, I just really messed up"? Because that little stunt right there cost that department $7 million. The officer got convicted. And the backup officer resigned. That is not lawful. We do not have a right to order people out of their home and arrest them if we don't have some form of police. I'm not saying you can't do it ever, but have some form of, usually you need some form of what? If you're gonna, "Hey, you're coming out here, I'm going in, I'm gonna grab you out." Some form of exigency. Some cops do the business card deal. Have you ever heard the business card the business card ruse? They'll say, okay, sir, you don't want to come out? Fine. Can you just take my business card and call me if you change your mind? The guy will reach out his door frame, hand his hand out, and grab the business card. And then the cop goes like this, I got your ass, and pull him out. If that's the game you want to play with your career, you do what you got to do. It ain't my career. It's your career. But if I was your boss, I would not allow it. I don't like playing games with the Fourth Amendment. People can stay in their home without being, pulled out of their home without a warrant or exigency. This guy violated a protective order. He's inside of his home. He doesn't come out. The cops then go in. This is what curtilage looks like. And the court said, we have expressly refused to read Santana as allowing physical entry past Peyton's firm line without a warrant or an exigency. Santana's description of the doorway of a house as a public place, we have said, should not be misinterpreted to mean that the officers have a right to enter and arrest anyone standing in an open doorway without a warrant. I'm asking you, please put a stop to this. It happens a lot. It really does. It happens a lot. And it's really problematic, especially when it results in a use of force. Invading curtilage. We also know that curtilage, is very protected. And when it comes to even stolen motor vehicles, this is a motorcycle that was stolen. It was covered by a bike cover, but that's irrelevant, quite frankly, from the case. The cops go up there. They, take off the tarp. They take this picture. They roll it out to the street. They recover it. They charge him later. We're not good because the motor vehicle exception does not apply to curtilage. So you would have to have another reason to seize that evidence. It's just another case to remind us that when it comes to houses, we got to play it, conservative. My friend says, sidebar, when it comes to pursuits, is that typically agency? Yes, yes and no, right? We know from Lang versus California that pursuit alone doesn't get you into homes. The guy was accused of a very minor crime and not pulling over for CHP. You need some form of agency, right? Something more. In fact, man, your timing is impeccable, right? All right, so misdemeanor hot pursuit requires agency. So what kind of agency? How about protecting people from harm, preventing their escape? Any felony right now, but can I tell you something? Can I tell you a secret? Can I tell you that one day the Supreme Court is also going to ask that if whether or not you had agency for felonies too? So for example, if you have a felony and it's nonviolent, there's no agency, no destruction of evidence, I think that they're going to say you need agency for that too, because they always say agency for homes. And the case Santana, which is your main hot pursuit case into a home, they said in that case that it was a felony plus agency, destruction of drugs. But look, that is actually, full of issues. Number one is, at the most, this officer with incredible hair has a misdemeanor, right? I think he does have reasonable suspicion. And I think that the guy committed a misdemeanor obstruction when he ran away. But those misdemeanors do not get you into homes, right? So if he busts down that door, are we lawful? The answer is no. Also, when the backup officers, come out, we're going to call the SWAT team, et cetera, we have the house surrounded. Did they come out on their own? Did they come out on their own voluntary, free will? And the answer is no. They were coerced out. So duressed out, correct, under duress. So when did the seizure occur? Outside or inside? Inside. If you're going to seize people inside their home, you need some form of agency. Cop was driving by a house. He saw this guy. He saw him basically, he thought he was packaging narcotics. So on the side of his house. And so he says, hey, come over here. I think he knew this guy, right? Maybe as a chronic offender. Hey, come over here. So the guy stuffs whatever he's, messing with in his stairs. And he comes out to the house and the cop, a backup unit shows up. The backup unit goes to the neighbor's yard, sees the drugs in the stairs in plain view, goes over to the defendant's curtilage, and then seizes it and charges him. With those facts and those facts alone, are we good? I'm going to tell you the answer. We're running out of time here. The answer is no, we're not good. We're not good because it's on his curtilage. Even though it's plain view doesn't get you access to things. It is true that not only must the officer be lawfully located in a place from which the object can be plainly seen, but he or she must also have a lawful right of access to the object itself. Police officers are prohibited from entering a person's home or its curtilage without a warrant, absent consent, or a showing of exigent circumstances. This is true even when the items of contraband are visible within the officer's plain view. So if you had something pressing, then go for it, right? If you had, somebody at the house and they're coming, you know, they can get the drugs, or you had rain falling because it can contaminate the drugs and, you know, so forth, that's fine. But just remember that you need some form of exigency. Guys, let's talk about drones. So generally, activity a person knowingly exposes to the public is not a Fourth Amendment, is not subject to Fourth Amendment protection, is not a constitutionally protected search. So generally, activity a person knowingly exposes to the public is not subject to the Fourth Amendment protection, is not constitutionally protected from observation. We know this from cats, what happened there, and you're welcome, everybody. So what happened, and share this with share with whoever you want. You're also going to get a link to this recording. You can share that as well. So PowerPoint, the recording, hopefully that will help you and your friends. What happened here was the FBI put a listening device, you know, on, look at Kevin, now Kevin's involved. I gotta like avoid the chat because it'll distract me too much. So basically what happened here is the FBI put a listening device on top of the phone booth while Katz was using it, Charles Katz, and he was making, you know, again, he's a bookie and so forth. They listened to his phone calls. It went to the U.S. Supreme Court. The government saying, hell, this is not a search because we didn't trespass or anything like that. But it was a search for two reasons. Number one is, did the suspect expect privacy, right? And the answer is yes. In the Katz case, Katz closed the door. You know, he didn't speak so loud that people could hear him, and he also, you know, paid his little dime in there, and he expected privacy. Number two is this something that the society would consider reasonable, right? Is it in this society in America? Is it okay? Is it reasonable to want to have a private conversation? Is it okay to want a private conversation on Facebook Messenger? The answer is yes. You know, you need a warrant to go grab those messages, right? But if you have a gang member, you know, showing his gun, his drugs, and so forth on his page, his Facebook page, and the cops happen to see that, is that private information? And the answer is no, right? So here's an example where the cops looked over a fence and saw marijuana growing. I use this case to kind of remind us that, hey, look, you know, looking at stuff that's in people's backyard may not be a search under the Fourth Amendment, but you have to have the right facts. Here's another famous case called Seriolo. What happened here was the police got into an aircraft, and from about 1,000 feet above the ground, they looked into a person's backyard. Curtilage, right? So curtilage, and they saw a greenhouse with marijuana growing. They used those observations in a warrant. Are we good? No. Laugh out loud. No, no. Okay. We are good. Okay. What did it say? Mom, meatloaf. All right. So, okay. So the observations were made in a physically non-intrusive manner. Any member of the public flying in this airspace would have, who glanced down, could have seen any everything that these officers observed. The defendant's expectation that his garden was protected from such observation is unreasonable and is not an expectation that society is prepared to honor. So they lose on both fronts. Guys, this happens all the time, right? You know, police officers in, you know, helicopters see things in plain view, even though that area is protected under the Fourth Amendment. As long as the helicopter is not violating the law, we should be okay. So the takeaway here is that naked eye observations from navigable airspace is not a search. What about this case? This is where the, and the reason I share these helicopter cases is because we need to understand those, because that's all we got. The Supreme Court has never decided anything about drones. And quite frankly, it's going to be a few more years before they even touch it. So the helicopter flies low, about 25 feet over the ground. You know the answer here. This is a search under the Fourth Amendment all day long. It's over the guy's curtilage. It's noisy. It's, you know, it's, Kevin says, you know, a 300-foot limit. I think it's actually 500 feet above the structure. But the point is, right? Highly intrusive naked eye observations are considered searches. So I want you to kind of have a framework here. If the drone is being flown like the member of the public can fly it, then we should be okay. But if it's highly intrusive, then we're probably not okay. However, this only applies to curtilage. So in the answer, Paul says, does it make a difference if the flight was specifically to look? The answer is no. I do not think so. I think that the intent does not matter. What matters is, was the drone deployed in a reasonable manner, like the public can do? Here was a case where the government got into, it wasn't a predator, but it was actually a an airplane. They got highly sophisticated equipment to look down in the Dow chemical plant. They saw, you know, violations of federal law. They said, hey, that is a, you know, violates our expectation of privacy. The U.S. Supreme Court says no, because the Dow chemical plant is not like a home. It's a 2,000 square acre, business complex, factory. It's not like a home. So the takeaway here is that highly intrusive searches of commercial property or open fields, even with high-tech equipment, are not searches. So deploy that drone with thermal imaging, with high-level magnification on open fields and businesses. Generally speaking, not a search under the Fourth Amendment. But they did say this, surveillance of private property by using highly sophisticated, when they say private property, they mean curtilage. Surveillance equipment not generally available to the public might be constitutionally prescribed absent a warrant. So we can cross a line. I got a question in the private chat that says, what about general businesses like convenience stores? Not a problem. Not a problem, because they have no expectation of privacy in those open to the public areas. Here was a case where in a case called Long Lake Township versus Maxon, where the town flew a drone 50 feet or so above the guy's backyard. Do you see a problem here? Right? Right? The answer is yes, right? We should not be over the property. The township's drone surveillance of ownerships of owner's property in support of its actions against owners, in which it's basically a junk car, junk vehicles, intruded upon the owner's reasonable expectation of privacy, implicating the Fourth Amendment, and was illegal without a warrant or traditional exception like consent. Any reasonable person would have expected low-altitude drone overflight to be trespassery and exceptional. So do not intrude on the person's property or the person's airspace while deploying a drone. Sometimes officers will say a person does not own the airspace above their property. Yes and no. They may not own it in a strict property rights sense, but people have a right to enjoy the airspace above their land. So, for example, 50 feet above the backyard. People are back there with the pool. They got the barbecue going and you got this drone flying over 50 feet. Is that interfering with their enjoyment of their land? And the answer is yes. But shoot that drone up 400 feet. Is it the same thing? Probably not. But I do not recommend that drones be flown directly over people's curtilage, period. I'm an off-center guy. Over property that they're allowed to be and looking in. While the topic of aerial drones may be in vogue, the law on aerial surveillance has been well established for decades. The Supreme Court held that the aerial inspection did not amount to a search protected by the Fourth Amendment, stressing the fact that observation was within navigable airspace and that the observation was physically not intrusive. Now, Cant 2 and the Maxim case can be read together. If we're being overly intrusive, we have a problem. But if we're just flying this drone in a manner that is consistent with the public, we should be okay. On the other hand, deploying drones in a highly intrusive manner may likely be a search.
In the small town of Westport, Connecticut, a drone is scanning for COVID-19 symptoms. And the reaction here is, well, mixed. Police have been flying drones here since 2016 for everything from traffic management to search and rescue. And they can use them to spot and warn people who are gathered too closely. But now, Dragonfly, the company that makes the drones, claims they can also detect whether you're running a fever, sneezing, or coughing heavily, all through a single camera flying 40 feet overhead.
Subtle differences are on like a millimeter type of basis. So if somebody's coughing, you know, like this or like this, it's actually quite a different type of cough actually that they're detecting.
The police chief says this partnership could help the town reopen, and they need every tool possible.
In a pandemic, we'll see the elevated temperatures, we'll see the increase in blood pressure, we'll see the flushed skin. So to have the technology available for future incidents, whether it be COVID-related or something else that comes our way, I think we need to prepare for that.
This is the first time Americans have been scanned for symptoms in this way, and there are skeptics.
I don't know that this technology could distinguish between somebody with COVID-19 and somebody with influenza. I'm inclined to doubt it.
Not to mention that many infected people never exhibit obvious symptoms. And even if it does work, are we ready to be scanned from the air?
The involvement of the police makes me more worried about how this technology might have what we sometimes call function creep, in that it is used and designed for one purpose, but then it gets repurposed for other things.
Do you believe that we're going to have to strike some kind of necessary compromise with the desire for privacy in order to get out of this thing?
Public health has built into it the need sometimes to invade people's privacies.
The chief says it's all just research, but the police will see and save everything.
By no means will we single out an individual and say, hey, look, you look like your temperature's elevated.
Will you be hanging on to data that Dragonfly is collecting, or does that somehow go around you?
Any missions, so to speak, that we fly with our drones, we keep those records.
The ACLU of Connecticut responded this week saying that any new surveillance measure that isn't being advocated for by public health professionals and restricted solely for public health use should be promptly rejected. Is this the kind of thing we'll have to use in order to gather in public again?
Do we really want to be entering into convention centers if they don't have a health monitoring system that can give us an indication or a reading of what is the potential risk?
Keep a safe distance of 6 feet from others.
There's the sign.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That's a little extreme for me. Austin says it's sketch. It is definitely sketch. Can you imagine this drone flying over and you say, hey, get away from your brother, you know? All right, but we're twins. The thought of government drones buzzing overhead, monitoring the activity of law-abiding citizens, runs contrary to the notion of what it means to live in a free society. So I want you guys to know that, look, generally speaking, deploying a drone in a manner consistent with the public is not a search under the Fourth Amendment, not right now. But if we abuse this, right, if we start reading people's body temperature and other things that are private, you know, arguably private and so forth, we are going to really, you know, encourage our judges to put a hamper on our activity. So be careful with the mission creep. There's something to be said about that. Right now in 2023, most drone issues are not, handled by case law. The Maxim case is kind of rare. It's mostly by state law. You know, so for example, Michigan prohibits harassing hunters with drones. That's actually very common in many states. North Dakota limits drone surveillance. Utah can use drones to find missing persons. California can't use drones as for paparazzi. Illinois basically is no drone use for criminal purposes. Nevada is no viewing of private areas without consent or agency or warrant. So you have these like patchwork of states and so forth, right? All right. So I actually already said about that case. All right. My final question for you, my friends, is this. Did you find this information useful? Please give me feedback if it did.